Welcome to Culture, Talent, and Growth. Join Anish Shah and the Ruckus team as they invite dynamic leaders to share what they've learned about creating lasting culture, attracting great talent, and achieving sustainable growth. Let's get started.
Hey, Rachel, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm wonderful. Thanks for taking the time to chat with me today. You've clearly been doing a lot of stuff over the last few years, so I just want to dig in and kind of get, first off, like the overall summary of what you're working on these days and have been kind of racing towards.
Of course, let's dive in. But thank you so much for having me on, and I'm excited to chat with you more about, you know, Krupa Consulting and the Good Smart and how you can run two companies at the same time and do them somewhat successfully. I don't know if anyone's ever going to say they're very successful.
If they do, it's because they are projecting. And I think every entrepreneur has to have a little bit of a syndrome within themselves. They're like, I don't know if we're doing enough and doing it fast enough and doing it well enough.
I agree with you 100%. I think there's always that the level. And I think you talk to any entrepreneur's therapist and they'll be the first one to say, you're doing a lot, even though you feel like you're not.
You're okay. Have you heard me list these things out? Like,
I should be doing this too. I shouldn't be talking to you. I should be spending this time somewhere else.
Fun fact, my chat with my therapist is right after this. So I'm going to dive in with everything that we just talked about today.
I mean, I think sometimes you have to give your therapist a challenge too.
Yeah, we'll see if she ever wants to do a podcast episode. I doubt she will, though. So yeah, I want to learn more about the two organizations and how one kind of led to the other.
Yeah, so I can jump into Krupa Consulting first. So Krupa Consulting is my PR agency where we focus on food and wellness brands. And I've had this company now for, which is crazy, 13 years, but have been doing PR for over 20, which feels archaic doing anything for 20 years when you feel you haven't done much. The PR agency focuses on food and wellness brands that have a mission to do more than just exist in one's home, exist on one's shelf, exist in this world, because we want to really use our voice as publicists to amplify brands that are doing it right. Because like I think sometimes publicists and PR is just considered people pushing emails and just selling things. And you're like, a good publicist is not selling things. They're actually telling you and sharing with you what makes a company so special. It's the same thing, I think, with recruiting. It's like, what makes this human so incredible and what makes you want to add them to your team? It's the same thing with PR of makes you want to really write about this? Like, what makes this deserve space on your pages or on your site? And so that's really like what our job is really to amplify the brands that we feel are doing it right from a sustainability perspective, improving the food system or improving one's health of, what do you actually need? And like, we look at ourselves as almost like a watchdog too of calling bullshit on some brands that are launching because you're like, okay, you're a wellness driven company, but like how much of this product do you have? And is it efficacious to the level of what you're doing? Mm-hmm. Or is this actually improving the food system? Or is this actually sustainable? Are you just greenwashing it? And that is like a role of a really good publicist. It's not a way of just saying yes, but also pushing back so that you're able to ask the questions that anyone would ever ask and have an answer to it.
And I love that you pointed out that both of our worlds could be compared to other firms that are not really pushing. And I guess what I like to say is like creating some level of electricity with what we do in recruiting or in PR. Anyone could just drop a bunch of cold emails and call it a day. But the good ones do a little bit more and add a little bit of electricity, add a personal flair and are known for that and get a great reputation for that. Did you have a personal passion or a background in any of the stuff in related to food products? Or was it just something that before you started this firm, you sort of fell into and by happenstance, this was your sort of focus?
I mean, back in early 2000s in New York, I did nightclub PR. So as a nightclub person that used to go to the clubs all the time and could talk about any club that you would ever want of like what makes it cool, what makes it special, what cocktails you should be drinking, food becomes that next thing that you're able to talk about because it's like as you get older, you still love that experience. And I think that's something that initially Krupa Consulting was very much into the hospitality world where we worked with a lot of restaurants. You could write about spirits. You could write about like, what makes this dish so like incredibly delicious? And so that's like the first iteration, I would say, like probably the first 5 years of the company. But then I found a book and it had a client called Clean Plates, which talked about more looking at restaurants and kind of just like fast casuals from like a sustainability side. So, you know, what are the ingredients and how are they purveyed? Like, is your products local? Are they looking at it from like organic? You know, how far away are they? And then grading it based on almost like a Zagat guide, but more from sustainability and organic level. And so that made me kind of start thinking of what's actually in the things that we're eating. And that was in pretty much at the same time as this rise of like a better for you CPG product. So like snack brands. And so that's like when you first started seeing Kind Bar, when you first started seeing more Crave Jerky, Harmless Harvest in that sense. And so it was just like, oh, you know, I can do food really well. There's this like new emerging category that's coming up from a snack perspective. We can also talk about this and make it cool, but also use some of these products and get them into like this nightclub entertainment industry, where one of the first clients I had was Brownie Brittle. And one of the first events that we got Sheila G in was a Weinstein party for Silver Linings Playbook. And we got Sheila G with a photo with Bradley Cooper, and it was in Wall Street Journal, talking about this debut of the Brownie Brittle, like Sheila G, because Sheila G used to do all the desserts for Disney. And so she moved from Disney and now doing desserts for Weinstein and doing really big things from like a, not necessarily catering, but fueling everyone at, you know, Sundance, fueling everyone at the award shows. So it was like taking a kind of a card out of like old school playbook, but putting it into like a fresh way of looking at it.
That's great. And I think anyone who ends up starting a company, usually, unless someone just starts a company because it's a hot space, like you might have seen with AI recently or Web3 previously, but a company like yours, there's always some story of like how it organically gets there of, oh, well, liquor, but I didn't want to be in liquor, but food is very similar. And this was something that took interest. So I like seeing how that kind of organically happened. So I live, as I mentioned to you before the call, I live in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, and I live above what I like to call the bougiest bodega on earth. It's got everything. It's got every keto snack, every healthy thing, gluten-free. And like, you know, the sections are pretty thick with, you know, multiple brownies, multiple granolas, multiple drinks. So I've got to imagine for CPG entrepreneurs, it's a little harder to stand out than back in like the Kind Bar days when they were like, the first thing new versus, you know, they're competing like against Nature Valley and having those brittle things spill everywhere. Obviously that upgrade is pretty massive, but now what can be done with these organizations in terms of like standing out when I'm walking around my bodega and I'm seeing 8 different like keto brownies, you know, what are you working with clients on to be like, okay, hey, yeah, we know there's competition. If there wasn't, that means there's no buyers. There's a reason there's competition. But what can be done to stand out there?
Yeah, I think it is a lot of trial and error because I think, I don't know the latest rate, but there's pretty much a CPG brand launching every single day, if not multiple launching a day in regards of just like snacks. But a crazy thing is that 80%, if not more, are going to fail. And so with that, it's like, how do you actually change that trajectory for people? And a lot of that is packaging. So the first thing you have to do is look at like, how do you get it off the shelf? So when you're looking at your keto brownies and your bougie bodega, it's like, what makes you gravitate towards one? Is it the health side of it, of like the number of protein or like the number of grams of sugar? Or is it actually the packaging? Or, hey, I haven't seen this before. Then the second thing is more of like a friend trial, or you read about it somewhere. Because then you're like, hey, I saw this. Ooh, I'm going to like kind of like dive into it. Or, you know, Sally said that it was like an incredible product I should try. And then from there, it's like actually opening it and trying it. And if it tastes like shit, you're never going to buy it again. And you might be hesitant to buy another product within that, you know, category, or maybe just within that brand. So it's a matter of like making sure. And that's kind of like what we look at too, is just like, is packaging look great? But then like, how does it taste? Because there's nothing worse, I think, today more than ever, that you have a really pretty package, but like the inside doesn't match the outside. And then you get a little bit discouraged in regards of this like better for you food category, because of the fact that there's always going to be a little bit more of a premium price to it. because of the fact that of the quality of the ingredients is going inside, but it's not crazy. You know what I mean? It's 25, 50 cents, you know, maybe a dollar, which for a lot of people that could, that's a lot more than anything else. So you want to be conscious of that. But also at the same time, you want it to be that, you know, we call snacks an affordable luxury because it's something that connects us all. And you can talk about a brownie versus talking about an experience that's hundreds of dollars. And you're talking about something that could be under $5 or under $10. And so I think taste is also subjective, but you pretty much know when you take something, you're like, I don't like it, but I know someone else who's going to love this. Unless it really tastes bad. And you're like, I have no idea who's going to even eat this, which also is like subject to taste is subject, but also not really in my mind.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really interesting. Yeah. And it's, and I like that you build in that taste factor, because I think a lot of things, and it might be even a shift towards the time now, when people have so much choice that they can find those things that hit the marks in terms of health they're looking for and match that taste. Because one of the things that I bought for years, I didn't really enjoy them, but I bought the RX bars for years. And I don't know, maybe that was just a moment in time where there wasn't a lot of competition and they nailed their packaging to just be like, if you just want protein and nothing else and some fruit, you know, go for this. But I can't imagine going back to buying those anymore. I never enjoyed them. They were just super easy and I can get it from Amazon and just keep running. So times have changed. So I guess if you're trying to launch that now, it has to be a lot better texture, has to be a lot better taste. You can't just be like, well, someone's getting the protein and the fruit and vegetables they're looking for in a single serving.
Yeah, there's so much innovation within ingredients and, you know, with taste and texture that it's a matter of, I mean, I always don't like to say trial and error. And I mean, that's something, you know, what we do really well. I think we do really well at my other company, The Good Smart, which is like our better for you convenience store. But we don't talk about health at all because that's also subjective. Very much, I feel so much more than maybe taste because everyone has a different level of health and what that means. We may have that conversation where like, I believe in a little bit of real sugar. I'm not a monk fruit stevia person. But other people are like, no, sugar is evil. And you're like, agree, sugar's all evil, but it depends on what quality you want and what quantity. And I think it's very much individualized too. It's the same thing with a running business or with anything. It's like everything is very individualized. So it's like you have to know what works best for you and works best collectively to make you function at your best.
Yeah, yeah. And I want to dive into the Good Smart a little bit. But first, a really quick question. So of all these snacks, any examples of like someone that you worked with that like stood out and, you know, that might be in a crowded market, but hey, they nailed the story, they nailed the packaging, they found that unique, specific audience that really liked what they were doing?
Yeah, I think right now, a brand that I'm really loving that's kind of, it's kind of owning a category, Gigantic, which is like a sort of sweet candy bar. It falls within that candy section of like, I love a Snickers bar, but there's only 7 grams of sugar. And so it's like a nice sweet treat, but there's also like, you know, a little bit of protein in it. I feel maybe not. It's just a candy bar, but you could also look at it as like sometimes better than like a bar because of the nutritionals on it. So that was like creating a new category of the sort of sweet, because now you're seeing more products and brands that are launching that are in kind of candy. I'm a candy person that has like less than 10 grams of sugar. And it doesn't have like the monk fruit stevia, but more organic cane sugar or using dates or using something along those lines that is less of versus full sugar, you know? And so I think you're seeing a lot of that where you have Gigantic, you have Culture Pop, you have like different, like just a lot of different products that are just choosing to use a little bit versus a lot. So it's not as sweet as like, I think you mature more, your palate can kind of like go on a sugar level, but you still get that real sugar side.
Yeah. And I just went to the website and I'm looking at the pictures of this and it looks very appetizing. And then I get down to like the detail section, 7 grams of sugar, plant-based caramel. I don't even know what that means, but I would taste it and it sounds like it'd be good. Perfect. So this is something for when you want to treat yourself and you don't want to go kind of overboard.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing is it's also don't deprive yourself of things. That's like depriving yourself of anything. And that's when you go eat the pint of ice cream. But if you want a pint of ice cream, eat a pint of ice cream. Just know that you're going to feel it in the morning or not. And just make sure that it's like quality, you know?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Cool. Well, I'd love to dive into your second business, the Good Smart, if you want to explain that a little bit.
So the Goods Bar is a better for you, socially conscious convenience store. We have three locations in New York. We have in Soho, Lafayette between Broom and Grand at Rockefeller Center, and then 11 West 42nd Street. The later of the two are in office buildings. So we took over existing newsstands with Tishman's Fire, an incredible like real estate development company, and kind of serve as like an amenity to the building. Because of after COVID, there is like more of an amp for better for you in regards of like, how do you fuel your body? And you still need snacks throughout the day. You still want, you know, a kombucha, you still want a soda, you still want something, but giving it better options, but also looking at it for us, it's really focusing on emerging brands. So brands that are just launching and really looking at who the founders are and what is that story of like, why are they making the product? A majority of our makers and our founders in the store are either female or from diverse backgrounds. So it's also really elevating the brands that are doing it right. Quality of ingredients, like looking at it from a moment that is a product that's from their, you know, family heritage or something that is like really deep within the culture of what they're doing. I think that was the biggest thing during also during, you know, the pandemic. It was, how do you travel without traveling? And that was through food. And a lot of people created products that you could be transported to, you know, Japan with like a miso bar. You're able to go to, you know, West Africa with some fino. You're able to do different things because of like the flavors and the profiles that these founders are now creating. And so that's for us is really creating a store full of better for you items, but also looking at the founders who's making it and like the taste is everything, but also looking at price point to make sure that it's not crazy. So it's not bougie in the sense it may look a little bit bougie, but for us, it's really conscious of how do we make sure that when you walk in, that if you have $5, you're going to leave with a really great cup of coffee in a bar or something.
For $5, I don't know if I can get either of those two things individually around me for $5. That's fantastic.
No.
And you actually bring up an interesting point about like the internationalization of food and people's drive towards experiencing new cultures. Because as a kid growing up, I grew up in Northern California. I would have died if I brought any of like my home food to school. You definitely were going to take a shitload of teasing from the other kids because, you know, smells funny, all the stuff that's been documented. Well, like wouldn't dare. And now people's drive who haven't been to those places or it's so massive. Now I would be curious if a kid takes like very, very spicy, oily, high smell food into like their middle school or high school cafe where the other kids would be like, oh yeah, I want to try some of that. I want to know what that is. Like, get rid of this like ham and bologna sandwich. I want some of that. I don't know. I don't know if there's a shift even for like younger people. Definitely is for people who are adults.
I think so. I think there's a shift and I think it's generational. You know, I think I don't look at it as like, looking at one generation as like worse than the other, not worse, it's not even, it's just more of like learning and being more acceptive of what cultures are and who's around us. Because like, I think that we grew up with this standpoint of like, what's going on? What is it? What is this? Ooh, what is this? Let's try and taste everything.
Yeah.
And then now that we're older, that, you know, have children that could be younger, you know, that are growing up, they have more of that. It's like they're seeking more of like, what is going on? Like I have nieces that are 15 and 13 and they're obsessed with everything from Japan. They're obsessed with everything from India right now, where it's just like, I need this. I want to try it. And I think especially living in New York, you have such an ability to be transported and having like a day trip to, you know, anywhere. You can go to little Ethiopia, you can go to China, you can go to Poland by just taking a subway stop and being able to experience all of the traditions and like classic like flavors that you normally don't get anywhere else. And I think now that there's like such an array of snack brands, you're able to do that too, where it's just like Lily Puffs. You didn't have that back in the day. So you have Asha Pops that are using Puff Lilies. That are very much in like the Ayurvedic scene. And so you're just like, this is cool. Like, let's try this. Or a miso Japanese bar that's a savory protein bar. which you normally wouldn't have, not even a savory bar at that.
And they actually taste better than the legacy brands. I know I'm addicted to, I don't know what the brand is, but it's got a little Buddha on the front and it's like the little cheddar puffs. I'm addicted to those and yeah. they taste better than like Cheetos and et cetera. So with that, it's probably all just going to continue to progress with people being a lot more adventurous with their food. Whereas I think as a kid, I didn't have very many friends who were very adventurous with their food. And now I look at my nieces who are 6 and 10 and it's like, where do you want to go get dinner? When I was that age, it'd be like, oh, let's go to spaghetti. Let's get burgers. Let's get pizza. You know, the fancy dinner was like Olive Garden. Now they're like, oh, there's a prosciutto place down the street. That's magnificent. And oh, the hamachi over there is fantastic. I'm like, all right. I was deep in my 20s until I knew about any of that stuff, but that was great.
I think so. But I also think that's very like coastal. I like, cause our family is in Michigan and they're like the ones venturing out, but I don't know if they're going to venture so much into other cuisines, but I don't know if it's like 100% there, you know? And I think that what's cool about like the snacks is like the flavors that you're able to see. And I think with the explosion of like chili flakes, that's cool because like people are putting it on things and trying, but also learning about like, hey, here's this dish, Amsum, with like their spicy noodles that they just launched. You're able to be transported again. And it's just like removing and demystifying this like ethnic aisle within grocery stores, which shouldn't exist because it's just like, we are all part of just this culture and like, let's dive in and experience it. And like, where do you put one sauce versus another? And what makes, you know, pasta sauce different than another sauce from another country? It's just
absolutely,
it boggles
especially
my mind
since
sometimes.
Like simmer sauces and teriyakis and soy sauces are actually not that aggressive. No. A wild, spicy, aggressive taste. They're pretty simple tastes. And they're kind of thrown off into their own section. So do you organize your stores in any certain way? Or do you just kind of walk in and it's just like a melee of everything kind of mixed together? And you get to just kind of play with it all at once?
Our stores are less than 500 square feet, so they're super tiny. And so we kind of like do it in like sweet, savory beverages and then pantry and then new stuff. Because like, I think people love this to come in to see like the new stuff, but then there is like more pantry, but you'll see a sauce next to a nut butter because it belongs. We look at it as like, how would it, you put it in your house more so than anything? You'll be like, oh, I put the sauces together or I put the rices and like the noodles together. So you kind of look at it in that sense.
Okay. And when I go on your site, it looks like there are checkout options. So is the focus really a lot more on the foot traffic and buying things in the physical locations or more so online or a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of everything?
The online curated basically because of COVID. It was a purpose to be able to get more of the brands into the hands of our customers. That we're not coming into our store anymore. So it was more of how do I do this? What do I do? And I created like the first website by myself just to have products on it. And like the first iteration of like our online was more of snack boxes because we didn't understand the supply chain of brands in like the height of what was happening during COVID. So it was more of $20, $30, $50, $100, how much you want to spend and let me send you things. If you're gluten-free, paleo, yes, we'll classify it in that based on your eating style. But on the other side, like we're going to send you things. And it's like, oh, it's always like a surprise snack box, which we still have, but it's more that's from fun. A standpoint of it's, that's how it started. And so from like a capital perspective, you know, we haven't really raised any money. So like we just kind of turned it on. It's been running itself. And so we have a lot more work to do with the e-commerce, but at the same time, like people are shopping on it and loving it because what we do offer that others don't is like you can buy one gigantic bar, then you can buy one Aksha Pop. So you can buy one Olipop and one Pipcorn without having to go in on like their site sometimes to buy 12 of them because normally you have to buy by the case versus singular.
Okay. And by the way, I didn't realize that both of your businesses were bootstrapped. That's impressive. And I love bootstrapped founders. I think you can focus on your business, not the hamster wheel of consistently chasing investors. And you're just going to grow slower. And honestly, it's just so much more mentally relieving, not needing to be worth hundreds of millions of dollars by, you know, whatever, a certain date.
We're fundraising a little bit for the goods right now, but just like our first friends and family around. Mm-hmm. And otherwise it's been just, you know, bootstrapping it, which is nice. And I think there's a lot to be talked about in regards of, you know, what is actually success mean? Because like, I think that success for in the past was considered how much money you raise, versus the profitability of your company or your runway or what is your impact. So I think ultimately we're starting to see more of a shift. And I think especially with Patagonia and with other companies now of looking at it as like success is so different. And we can't label success based on just like how much money we raise from a VC, because that's not everyone's path. And it's not the impact of what makes a business successful.
Yeah. And the end result of that, as we've seen, is actually not making individuals nor employees of those businesses successful in the end either. So it was a time and place. and I think we're all seeing the results of that time and place, but it just shows folks who are just like knuckling down and making great businesses instead of just chasing valuation multiples. And so one of the things we touched upon before we started talking here and recording was, you know, the fact that you do run two businesses. And I feel from my vantage point, one business itself needs so much attention and so much love that it seems a little bit overboard to try to run two. Now, what's that experience? And I think you sort of I wouldn't say disagree, but you have an other viewpoint. And like, what's been your experience there? And how do you manage, you know, let's say someone's normal week running a business is 40 hours. Does that mean you work 80 hours? Or no, it's just you've got your processes, you figured some stuff out. We'd love to hear your journey and your thoughts there.
Yeah, like, and what we talked about before is like, I believe that you can run two companies because I feel like an entrepreneur is constantly going in their brain.
Sure.
And I think it's being able to have a great team allows you to do a lot. And I think it is goes back on what you're doing. Basically, it's all about the team that you're with. I wouldn't be able to run the convenience store if I didn't have a great team at the PR agency, because the company is more mature and they are a well-oiled machine. They know and they think they're, you know, looking at issues or celebrating wins, you know, with me, but also probably sometimes before me. And I'm there to really be like a really great cheerleader for them to do new business, to push them in a way that continues like to innovate within like the PR space. But then from the good smart perspective, it's more of like the bootstrap startup. And that's like also fun because it's fueling me to think about what I am as a founder for the businesses from the PR agency side too. So I know exactly what they're going through and able to supply more support for the founders that we work with, but they're also supporting me because of the fact of what they're going through of, you know, investors or what's happening with this supply chain, or have you read this? Here's this is relevant. So it becomes for me of like the two companies that I have, it's like an ecosystem that works really well together that they kind of are dancing side by side. And the more I know about the space on both sides, I think the more valuable it is for future growth of the convenience store and the PR agency, because you're able to see and talk to so many people.
That's really interesting. And yeah, the fact that they're both very snack and food oriented really bounces off each other. And, you know, to really sell well within your store or any other store, there has to be that great story there, great packaging, and you learn how to find and figure out how to work with the right companies to do that. So
yeah,
makes sense.
But it's also you're seeing what consumers want. And that's the biggest thing, is you're actually knowing how to talk to people, because you're talking to everyday people walking in. So you're walking into my store as if you walk into your bodega around the corner. How do you feel about that brand? Do you like that brand? What did you not like about the brand? Okay, let me find something better. Or what are we missing here? Oh, 10 people said, hey, this category is lacking. This could be a really cool innovation for like a brand to now have, because it's a void in the marketplace. And so it's this matter of this virtual cycle of you're talking to real customers, then you're able to pitch that to editors, but you're also able to talk to other brands and founders of being like, you should look at this category or this flavor, because this is what people want, but it's missing. And so it's super cool in the sense of just being able to talk to people.
That is super cool. And once you figure out that massive hole in a category that people are dying for, you can even go run and make your third business and be like, I'm going to be the first one to come out here because 10 people have asked for this and we don't got it and nobody's got it. So there you go.
I mean, there you go. But I think I have applause for anyone in like the CPG industry, especially food, of just supply chain safety, you know, just like co-manufacturing, packaging design, like, you know, trying to find more sustainable things. It's a hard business. And so I love helping them to be like, how can we help and serve you and make you grow? But like that backside, I don't know how people do it. I don't think you can run two businesses if you have a CPG company on that sense. It's hard. Yeah,
I was going to ask if you have to deal with a lot of supply chain, because when I look at your online checkout, then you have to start thinking about delivery and getting stuff out the door, fulfillment, all of that, which, yeah, my brain doesn't work as detailed enough to be able to get those working. So it sounds like you don't have to deal with as much of that as like an everyday CPG founder might.
Not as much as an everyday CPG founder, but we do have a complicated supply chain because I do like working with young emerging brands. But again, it goes back into having an incredible team, and I have an incredible supply chain and operations manager that's how her brain works. It's like, boop, 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 and we're going to order this and here's this. And you're like, I look in an Excel doc sometimes and I'm like, it's another language. And she's like, this makes perfect sense. And you're like, I don't understand. And so it goes back into, you really need great people. And that's like, you know, the job of like what you do from a recruiter perspective too. It's like, you need good people that you can trust. And especially like stranger danger is a real thing when you're hiring people. You're like, I'm going to give you everything. But if you don't know them or have like a background or someone vetting them, it's really challenging to have that. I'm going to give you my all at first.
It very much is. Leadership teams, it's what I've heard. And I really do believe there's usually someone at the top who's maybe a little bit more ADD and someone who's working with them who has been typified as being a little bit more OCD, and they need to kind of work off of each other. Because if it's too far in one way, just a bunch of ideas that don't get executed. And if it's too far the other way, it's a bunch of analysis and nothing moves forward. So that's kind of the starting main team. If anyone's recruiting advice on how to build their early two-person team, there you go.
You need two. You need someone else too. They kind of like interpret both of them, but it takes time. You know, I think for like probably 2 months, like we just weren't speaking the same language because you're just like creative brain versus, you know, just like more of the analog. You're just like, how do we do this? Mm-hmm. Like, what language are you? And then that's like where it's just like, so do you mean this? Or do you mean this? I mean this. Okay, great. We were starting to get in our stride. But it's sometimes a language barrier of just like talking to people.
It very much is. And my gut sometimes when I'm working with someone who's opposite of the way I naturally am is to be like, no, I've got it. It's this way. But I've tried to really push down my urges to immediately push back on whatever they're telling me and be like, okay, keep going. Let me listen. And after a while, even if, you know, maybe I'm not necessarily, you know, completely in agreement with them, they're empowered to then say, look, this is what I think. Listen to me. I'm like, great. I think the biggest thing that anyone can do if someone is a little complimentary or opposite to them is just consistently let them talk. And we've worked with startups where I think the leadership allows folks who think a little bit differently than them to talk. And frankly, we've worked with a lot of startups who do not allow their leadership team to talk back to them. It's just like what I say goes and just go get it done. And frankly, a lot of what they put out in the world and their employee turnover and a lot of issues that come up are coming from that they don't really have great vehicles for communication internally. So as long as you know that you trust each other, you don't have to agree with each other every single time, but you got to let them talk and you got to let them express what they are trying to express and really just go from there.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And I think that's part of it is just listening, but also I feel like it was reading like the New York Times and talking about like listening to like one of like how Jeff Bezos runs a meeting. And it was the point that really resonated. It was just like, speak last. Whomever is in the leadership role, speak last, because you need to make sure that you hear everyone and your opinion should come at the end after you listen to everyone so that they're not swayed by what you think first. Mm-hmm. And so that everyone is actually speaking their truth without having your opinion put in at all. Because like, you might be able to like flourish your thought into something else because their idea is much better than yours? Or how do we combine all of these together? But someone, most of the time, people are not going to give their full opinion if they know you want to do something.
You're not creating space for
it.
Yeah. It's the curse of MSPIR, most senior person in room. If that person is coming in and they have ideas, it just going to be whatever that person goes. So we just did the last episode we did was about non-founder CEOs and folks who were promoted up into the CEO seat, didn't start the companies. And, you know, one of the biggest things that ended up being a problem, you know, you think you want to become CEO because you want what you say and your ideas and strategy to be like the things that get executed on versus what you wanted to get done being pushed down and you can't get your ideas moving. It's like, oh my God, now I'm the CEO. Now I'm getting to have my ideas executed. And then the curse of that, suddenly you're just spitballing with people in meetings and you're like, oh yeah, well, this is an interesting idea. And then like, and everyone's just sort of like, yeah. Okay, cool. We'll go do that. I'm like, no. I don't know if that's the right idea. Yeah. Push back on me. And suddenly you have to deal with the fact, oh, be careful what you wish for, because suddenly everything you say goes. And you know, that's a bit of a shift. And you have to learn to put asterisks on what you say and tell people, look, I don't know if this is correct. I am still thinking it out, but here's an idea I have, and it's tough. So my last question, what's next for you? Is it keeping on the journey of these two companies or any more excitement, or what do you think the next kind of year has in hold for you?
You know, I think my hands are full with these two right now. So there's not going to be a third, but I think there's a lot that, you know, we're working on from a Gustora perspective of different verticals that we're building out. And, you know, not necessarily for us, it's not the number of stores, but the impact of the stores, or how do we really be a true partner for the brands that fill our store? And then from the PR side, it's continuing. PR has shifted and changed. You have, as you mentioned, AI, you have, you know, different affiliate marketing, and how do we continue to evolve? Because the industry of PR, I don't think is ever going to die, because you need impactful stories to talk about your brand, about the founder, and like really cool feature pieces that you can't get by just paying for them. And so you need to have those relationships from a PR perspective, but then it's like working with the brands that, again, that deserve the space within a magazine or within like a newspaper or within like an online platform so that others can look at it. And it's just like, how do you continue to shift to do more good? And that's kind of just really for us. It's like, what's that next year look like? Is just trying to make more of an impact across the board.
It's fantastic. I'm excited to watch your journey and continue to do what you've been doing and add impact to companies that you care about and are kind of speaking the language that's exciting for you. Well, this was a great conversation. I feel like I learned a lot, and I feel like I was able to go with you on your full journey.
Thank you. I will say one more thing I forgot to
Please.
Say. Anyone listening, they need snack curations. We can curate snacks for any pantry. No, you know what I mean? It's like you have a business. You might as well also like walk the walk and talk the talk in regards of what you're doing from a snacking perspective.
Oh, interesting. You mean like corporate snacking, like stocking up offices. Yep. Has that been kind of going up or down since some offices are a little bit less full these days, or?
It's going up, actually, because of the fact that you want to go into the office, and what's going to sway you to go to the office, as much as like snacks seem so little, it's the small things that add up to something greater. And so we've had companies and brands work with us, say, during AAPI month. It's like looking at like who are like the, you know, Asian American Pacific Islander brands that we want to fill our snacks so that our teams can try and taste them. You know, how do we do about like all female founded and Black founded brands? And so that you're able to like bring people together and also have team tastings. We have some brands that are remote that do team tastings. They're like, we need 50 boxes going to these 50 people. And on this day, we're going to taste them and we're going to give you a report back. And I'm like, great. I love your report back. It's not needed by any means, but they just choose to like say, we love this, or we did it like this, and half the team loved this. And it's like a fun way to interact again, which is lovely.
I think that is lovely. And from our recruiting, more of our clients are pushing people back to office than not. And I do think snacks and good food would probably be the number one reason I would go back with, you know, it's honey versus vinegar. It's forcing someone back, or like, come back. We got some good snacks for you. We got some good lunch here. make it an exciting experience. So thanks for digging through that with me.
Of course. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Have a good rest of your day.
Thanks for tuning in to Culture, Talent, and Growth. If you found value in this conversation, please leave a review, subscribe, and share this episode with a friend. You can visit bringruckus.com for more ways to connect. And remember, new episodes come out on Tuesday.